Many experts believe we have to make significant strides in becoming a carbon neutral planet by 2030 if we want to reverse the impacts of climate change. This podcast exists to help everyday people reduce their carbon footprint in a practical way and become a part of the solution. It's time to rise up and join the carbon neutral movement. This is the Carbon Neutral Podcast. This week was a busy one. There are too many stories to talk about, quite honestly. A part of me has considered making this segment a secondary episode that I could do maybe once per week. We'll continue to see how things go. Research. Secondly, from the Smart Energy International, corporate solar funding increased by 24% in 2020, despite COVID-19. Another article by Clean Technica, 2021, they're predicting that electric trucks are going to be coming to the roads. The next is by The Guardian. In 2020, we saw 22 disasters, 262 fatalities, and $95 billion in damages. The U.S. saw a record year for climate-driven catastrophes. Business Live said there's 750 million pounds of plans revealed to build UK's first low-carbon hydrogen production hub at the Stanlow refinery. The next article is by the Hydrogen Fuel News. It says sustainable hydrogen production research is going to move forward at Oregon State University. And I remember reading this article. It looks like they're also partnering with a couple of other colleges, including Cornell. The next is by Fuel Cell Works. Hydrogen Council reaches 100 plus members as the hydrogen energy enters the next stage of growth. The Guardian, more than 50 countries commit to protection of 30% of the Earth's land and oceans. Clean Technica, Elon Musk talks zero emission rockets. Clean Technica, God bleeds, oil graduates aren't finding jobs. And that article was just all about how some of the oil jobs that used to be basically a promised job almost out of college is not the case anymore. Grist, 2020 was the hottest year on record. We'll remember it as one of the century's coldest. Obviously, that article talks about the global warming over the next 100 years. Fuel Cell Works. Hyundai establishes a hydrogen fuel cell system product and sales subsidiary in China. So those are the 12 that we're going to not touch on in detail. I have 5 stories that I thought were interesting that I'd like to talk about this week. So let's start with New York. New York's $306 billion 2021 infrastructure plan is now the largest in the nation. In an article written by Clean Technica, they discussed how the New York governor, Andrew Cuomo, has just announced the state's 2020 infrastructure plan. It's a $306 billion plan, makes it the largest in the nation. The plan includes a lot to support climate-friendly transportation solutions. One notable project is the $1.6 billion transit hub at the Moynihan Train Hall. The 255,000-square-foot train hall just had its grand reopening, and this is just a small fraction of the larger plan for the area of New York. In 2021, New York State will build on that progress to complete the build-out and connectivity of Midtown West with a bold transit-oriented developmental plan. The $51 billion plan will create 196,000 jobs, new outdoor spaces, affordable housing, improved public transit and pedestrian connections, and bring commercial and affordable housing opportunities to the Manhattan neighborhood. The broader state transportation plan also includes $51.5 billion from 2020 to 2024 capital to improve mass transit for millions of New Yorkers and the $2.6 billion Long Island Railroad third track project. The state is also invested in massive airport modernization, road, hospital, and park projects. I'm going to have these 5 articles linked in the show notes. With that said, let's move on to England. The next article we're going to talk about is the Net Zero Carbon Hydrogen Blend to Heat Homes and Businesses in Northeast England. Winlaton, a small village in the northeast of England, will be piloting a use of blending hydrogen for heating, becoming the first public network to do so. Gas Distributors, Cadent, and Northern Gas Networks, and their partners are in charge of the project, dubbed High Deploy, which they consider a vital step towards introducing hydrogen in the public gas network nationally. Heating makes half of the UK's energy consumption and a third of the nation's carbon emissions. And since hydrogen does not release carbon dioxide when burned, there's going to be a potential to save around 6 million tons of CO2 emissions every year in the 20% hydrogen blend that's going to be rolled out across the UK. Beginning in early 2021 and running for around 10 months, 670 homes in Winlaton, as well as a church, a primary school, and several businesses will receive 20% hydrogen blend as a part of their existing gas supply. This blend percentage is currently the highest in Europe, and customers do not need to make any changes to their appliances or pipework to accommodate for it, at least for the time being. And down the line, should there be a switch to 100% hydrogen, there will be a need to have new boilers. HyDeploy launched in January of 2020, with its first trial at Keele University, which makes the first time zero carbon hydrogen was injected into the UK's modern gas grid. Plans for the next stage are to introduce 100% heating through hydrogen. The results of the project will be submitted to the government, which will then be evaluated, and then they will make policies about the future of the gas. This is really big news, and we'll definitely revisit this in the next couple of months. So let's move on to the third article, and this is from Green Tech Media. Almost all new U.S. power plants built in 2021 will be carbon-free. Wind and solar make up a small share of U.S. electricity production today, but they're poised to supply 70% of new power plant capacity built this year. Solar will be the most new capacity with 39% according to the latest tally by the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Wind follows close behind with 31%. The long-awaited Vogtle nuclear plant in Georgia could finally wrap up one of its reactors this year, contributing another 3%. And battery storage, which will grow to 11% of new capacity with the carbon impact determined by the cleanliness of electricity that charges them. Natural gas, the dominant fuel source for U.S. electricity, is only expected to account for about 16% of new power plant capacity. Almost all of these gas generators are going to be popping up in Texas, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And of the new plants built this year, 84% will deliver electricity without burning fossil fuels. Obviously, this is great news, and speaking of which, let's talk about some of the positive global actions that was summarized by an Energy Central article. The biggest environmental crisis facing the world today is climate change. The extreme atmospheric changes over the last century and the ensuing economic and social disruptions that these have had on our lives give credence to this global crisis. But what is this world up to in its bid to fight climate change? To begin with, it is refreshing to know that 120 of the world's countries have now made a commitment to net zero carbon emissions to be achieved at various target dates. And this article mentions a country I forgot to shout out last week, which is Norway, another company that's pushing to be carbon neutral by 2030. So the first global action is, apart from the serious-minded countries, other countries are also doing their bits to mitigate the effects of climate change. For example, Kenya is embarking on reforestation initiatives and employing really innovative ways to plant trees. The country is planting trees with special seed balls covered in charcoal dust to prevent animals from eating these seeds and to protect them from the sun until the natural environment conditions are ripped for germination. The seeds are broadcast using various innovative methods to ensure that the seeds are taking roots where they land. Kenya has now distributed over 13 million seed balls since 2016, and the survival rate is remarkably high. Global action number two. About 1,000 multinational companies have now committed to reducing carbon emissions, and this is from the World Resources Institute, while some 340 companies have committed to become net zero. Global action three. Cities across the globe have joined the fight. Obviously, we talked about this last week. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change reports that 400 cities around the world now aim for net zero emissions by 2050. The fourth global action, financial institutions are abandoning fossil fuels and banking their money on clean energy. The United Nations Environmental Program reports that 130 private banks have agreed to align with the Paris Agreement. The European Investment Bank will, from 2022, stop funding oil, gas, and coal projects. Similarly, the world's largest asset management firm, BlackRock, is shifting its $7 trillion U.S. dollar portfolio to focus on climate change. And on a complete side note, I actually found out this past week that my bank is closing. I've used Simple since I got married in 2018, which is like an online bank that's kind of partnered on top of like a regional bank, but they are closing that subsidiary. And so now I have to look for a new bank. I'm actually going to be opening up my bank tomorrow with Aspiration. If you've not heard of them, I will definitely talk about them in an episode. I think you guys will find them fascinating. Their business model is very unique. They're a bank that's committed to clean money, meaning that they do not use their customers' money to fund these fossil fuel projects that we're talking about. If you didn't know, the big four banks, which include Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Citigroup, lend more than $240 billion of their customers' money to fund these fossil fuel projects today, which is why this point of 130 private banks aligning with this Paris Agreement is so crucial and so important. And mind you, all of these are private banks, so perhaps you could look into a bank like Aspiration or one of these private banks. Global action number five, last but not least, the mood of the people is also shifting with their conscious awakening to the realities of the impending climate catastrophe. From Greta Thunberg's school strikes, the Extinction Rebellion, the public appetite for change against businesses as usual is growing rapidly. Now let's move on to the final article, which is a New York Times article that had put out a survey that found out that majority of voters support initiatives to fight climate change. And this majority of registered voters comes from both parties of the United States to support initiatives to fight climate change, including many that are outlined in climate plans announced by President-elect Joe Biden, according to this new survey. The survey was conducted after the presidential election, suggesting that majority of Americans in both parties want a government that deals forcefully with climate change instead of denying its urgency or denying that it exists. And the survey published Friday by Yale Program on Climate Change Communication and the George Mason University Center for Climate Change Communication, 53% of registered voters said that global warming should be a high or a very high priority for the president and Congress. And 66% said that developing sources of clean energy should be a high or very high priority. 8 in 10 supported achieving those by providing tax breaks to people who buy electric vehicles or solar panels and by investing in renewable energy research. And of those polled, 83% said that they supported creating a jobs program that would hire unemployed coal workers, shut down old coal mines safely, and restore the natural landscape. The same percentage said that they supported job programs that would shut down thousands of abandoned oil and gas wells around the nation, which would pollute and leak methane, a potent greenhouse gas, which we are going to be talking about. Not in this episode, but we will talk about methane. I thought that this survey was very encouraging, and it means that we are all getting more bought in more than ever before. And now we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to get into the second segment of the episode where we're going to define carbon neutrality and carbon footprint. I'm going to talk to you all on the other side. Before we get into the show, I wanted to give you all a quick update. Last week, we talked about the initiative that I created, the Carbon Neutral Project, and how this podcast is the first resource to provide people with a way to combat climate change and reduce their carbon footprint. Well, now we have two resources. I'm creating a weekly newsletter that you can subscribe to using the hyperlink in the show notes. This newsletter will be a collection of articles from that current week, and these articles will be specific to climate change and carbon neutrality. This newsletter will be written in a TLDR form, which stands for Too Long Don't Read, for those of you that don't follow the acronym, and you can quickly get a gist of what happened in the space for the week, but I will also be providing links to these articles if you want to explore them further. You will only get one email per week sent out every Friday, and it will contain between 3 to 5 summarized articles so that you don't feel overwhelmed. This newsletter will be the easiest way to keep you informed each week, but similar to how we opened up this episode, I will be talking about a few of these articles to start the show of each week. Now, let's get into the show. The reason I wanted to talk to you about carbon neutrality and carbon footprint this week is because I want to make sure that going forward, there is somewhat of a general basis of understanding for these terms and kind of get everybody on the same page. I want to give you a background behind the terms, go into detail about what they really mean and how they came about, and then we're going to briefly touch on who is really in charge of the pollution of greenhouse gas emissions. Is it on us as individuals, or is it on the companies? And that's going to be in a later segment. So first, let's start off by talking about carbon neutrality or carbon neutral. It is in fact the name of the podcast, right? So first off, why does carbon neutrality matter in the first place? I'm not going to assume that just because you're listening to this podcast, you're fully bought into the idea of becoming carbon neutral. As we discussed in the last episode, many companies, institutions, and individuals are now turning to carbon neutrality as a way to offset some of the dangerous effects of burning fossil fuels. And these fossil fuels are what are responsible for heating our planet. You'll often hear of the term greenhouse gas emissions, or GHG for short. These greenhouse gases are specifically what heat the planet. And this is why those fighting for changes are pushing these companies to switch to renewable energy sources, because renewable energy does not emit these gases. And carbon neutrality is vital if we want to stop and prevent climate change. When we overload the atmosphere with bad chemicals, it can't function properly, and so the air begins to heat up. Carbon neutrality provides accountability for these entities, organizations, and individuals. Humans are the cause of this environmental damage, so it is our responsibility to take action and undo the damage. If we do our part and strive, or at least achieve, carbon neutrality, we know that we are living a life of a sustainable lifestyle. Now, the expression carbon neutral first appeared in the early 90s. Early use of the term referred to plants, which can be described as carbon neutral if the amount of carbon dioxide that they absorb whilst living is equivalent to the amount of carbon dioxide that they give out when they burn as fuel. There are two different sources citing the Oxford Dictionary naming carbon neutral as its word of the year. One said it was 2006, one said it was 2016, but I have a strong feeling that it was actually 2006. Either way, the term has really picked up over the past 5 years or so, ever since the Paris Agreement came out in 2015 in an effort to align countries to achieve carbon neutrality over the course of the next few decades. Being carbon neutral means working out your total climate-damaging carbon emissions and taking steps to reduce them, as well as adopting measures which counteract the effects of previous pollution. This usually involves investment in renewable energy sources, such as wind or solar power. In addition, an important aspect to achieving carbon neutrality is it's neutralizing the effects of previous pollution, such as planting trees and plants which absorb carbon dioxide. These measures are often referred to as carbon offsets. And carbon offsets are a very polarizing subject. We're going to be talking about carbon offsets next week and how they may or may not be a good approach for achieving carbon neutrality. So let's dive a little bit deeper. The theory of carbon neutrality is based on the aim that the sum of all the greenhouse gases an entity puts into and takes from the atmosphere will balance out as zero, as we have kind of been mentioning. So for example, if a company wants to become carbon neutral, any emissions that they create must be offset by emissions that they're going to reduce elsewhere. This practice provides a planet-friendly alternative to whatever is being used, whether that's airplanes or livestock, construction tools, or cosmetics. It is often put into place through the use of carbon offsets, which use various systems to measure and value activities that are either greenhouse gas emitting or offsetting. Essentially, it's balancing these two sides on the scale for emissions which the atmosphere can handle, and that's currently overweight on our side of the scale. And before we get into carbon footprint, I want to quickly touch on the term climate neutral because you may have heard this one as well. First off, they're not the same, carbon neutral and climate neutral. Carbon dioxide accounts for only 3/4 of warming impact that humans have on the planet. Other greenhouse gas emissions are coming from different aspects specific to chemistries. So, for example, methane can trap many times more heat per molecule than carbon dioxide, but lives in an atmosphere for a much shorter period of time. Methane's global warming is about 56 times that of the carbon dioxide over a 20-year period and 21 times over 100 years. So when you hear climate neutral, it's taking into consideration all GHG, not just carbon. I nearly named the podcast Climate Neutral, but instead I named it Carbon Neutral because I think that the phrase carbon neutral is a little bit more known, and it's probably going to get searched a little bit more than climate neutral would have by potential listeners like yourself. The concept in the name of carbon footprint derived from an ecological footprint concept, which was developed by William E. Reese and Mathis Wackernagel in the 1990s. While carbon footprints are usually reported in tons of emissions or CO2 equivalent per year, ecological footprints are usually reported in comparison to what the planet they can renew. This assesses the number of Earths, quote unquote, that would be required if everyone on the planet consumed resources at the same level as the person calculating their ecological footprint. The carbon footprint is just one part of the ecological footprint. Carbon footprints are more focused on ecological footprints since the measure is merely emissions of gases that cause climate change into the atmosphere. Carbon footprint is one of the family of footprint indicators, which also includes ecological footprints like water footprints and land footprints. It was then later popularized by BP, one of the larger oil and gas companies based in London, England, and they ran a PR campaign which has rightfully been heavily criticized. Imogen Learnmonth, editor-in-chief at The Thread, said it very well, so I'm just going to read an excerpt from her article. At the time of this campaign's release, BP was producing around 2 million barrels of oil per day and had just bought their 13,000th gas station. 100,000 people in 100 countries couldn't put a dent in the impact that this one petroleum company could have divested even in a fraction of its funds into green energy. It was clear that the message of the oil company and gas industry was sending heat-trapping carbon pollution is your problem, not the problem of the companies drill-deeping into the earth and then selling these carbonaceous fuels refined from ancient decomposed creatures. Like many fossil fuel giants, BP had hired a PR team employing the services of Ogilvy and Mather to help turn the climate tables onto the individual. The next trick in their playbook was to unveil BP's carbon footprint calculator. They had this calculator on their website, and in 2004 alone, nearly 300,000 people used this calculator to find out what their carbon footprint was. Their innovation was matched by yet another manipulative ad campaign by Ogilvy and Mather, whereby the firm wandered London suburbs and interrogated average people about their carbon footprint. Slowly but surely, BP was linguistically replacing itself in the carbon conversation with personal pronouns like I, we, and you. Fast forward, and it's evident that BP itself has done nothing to curb its own carbon footprint. The company is still producing an average of 3.8 million barrels of oil and gas every single day, and in 2019 it purchased a new oil and gas reserve in West Texas that lauded to shareholders its biggest acquisition in 20 years. All the while, the concept of personal carbon footprint has become more and more intertwined with how we conceptualize climate change. Over a decade later, and carbon footprint calculators are everywhere, strewn across travel sites, collated into helpful guides by influential publications like the New York Times and across Environmental Protection Agency websites, the term carbon footprint has been infused into our normal everyday lexicon. The true nature and true genius of the scam becomes clear when you get into the nitty-gritty of an individual's carbon options in a world that's still run predominantly on gas and oil. A few years after BP began their carbon diet, quote-unquote, campaign researchers at MIT calculated that the carbon emissions of homeless men who ate soup in kitchens and slept in homeless shelters in the U.S., they found that the individual would still be directly emitting some 8.5 tons of CO2 each year. BP sought to explain the carbon crisis in a way that assigns responsibility for it the careless individual driving a diesel car, whilst BP itself registers its own concerns by appearing already to be doing something about it, all the while avoiding outlining a specific accountability plan. But even if a homeless person has an unsustainability high carbon footprint, the reality for the average individual is that it's even more untenable as long as fossil fuels are on the basis for our energy system. So, is a carbon footprint and calculating your carbon footprint just a scam? And can we even calculate our carbon footprint accurately? First off, no, I don't think that your carbon footprint is just a scam. And as I said earlier, they didn't even create this concept, they just popularized it. And honestly, I think it's a great tool for individuals to correlate their actions to the impact that they have on the climate. And down the road, we're going to be talking about how accurate a carbon footprint can be, and we're going to get into it in a very specific episode where it's going to be all around carbon footprint. Final thoughts for the segment. I don't think that we should be thinking of it as a scam to track our carbon footprint. However, we should know in the back of our minds that it's really important for us to vote for things like renewable energy so that we can ultimately create a carbon neutral planet, climate neutral planet. In the next segment, we're going to be talking about how responsible we are as individuals when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions compared to companies like BP. Talk to you all on the other side. This episode is brought to you by Vivo. It's a new year and a great time to focus on your health, as many people are creating their New Year's resolutions to eat healthier. I've been using Vivo for 1.5 years now, and I absolutely love their Perform protein powder. So how much do I love it, you ask? When my mom asked me for some ideas for a Christmas present this year, I only gave her one, and that was a refill of my Vivo protein. Why do I like Vivo? Well, first off, their story resonated with me. There are a couple of guys based in the UK that weren't happy with the protein powder options on the market. You either had to use a powder full of ingredients that you can't say, and we all know that aren't good for us to consume, or you had to go with a clean powder that had to be masked with several other ingredients in your smoothie just because of how terrible it tasted. Now, you don't have to go with either of these options. Vivo has a range of plant-based products from protein powders to creatine, vitamins, multinutrients, matcha powder, and even ground coffee. As someone who hadn't had good experiences with clean protein powder in the past, I was a bit skeptical for how it might taste. I'm one that typically drinks the powder with just water or oat milk, but I was pleasantly surprised. And more importantly, they're a certified carbon neutral company. Their products are certified vegan, gluten-free, BPA-free, zero waste, and they only use organic ingredients, which is approved by the FDA. About a year ago, they also made the transition to fully home compostable packaging, which means that you can compost your packaging in your garden, and offer bamboo scoopers sold separately as to eliminate the plastic that they used in their materials. And for every order that they receive, they will plant one tree for the purpose of reforestation, agroforestry, and reducing extreme poverty for local villagers. They've now planted over 250,000 trees. If you're looking to get healthier this year, give them a try using the link in the show notes of the podcast for 10% off on the order. This affiliate link will only be good till April 5th, 2021, and for full transparency, I will get a 10-pound credit if you make the purchase using the link. Now, let's get back to the episode. So here's a statistic that will alarm you, but hopefully doesn't discourage you. Only 100 investors in state-owned fossil fuel companies are responsible for around 70% of the world's historical GHG emissions. And crazy enough, of those 100, 25% of those companies are responsible for 50% of GHG emissions. That's right. Every other company in the rest of humanity contributes to just 30% of greenhouse gas emissions. This is why governmental policies matter, as I just talked about. They are the only thing that can change the actions of these 100 companies. However, 30% is still plenty of work for the rest of us. We talked about a stat last week where 72% of greenhouse gas emissions are coming from cities. And just like suburban living environments shouldn't feel like they can do whatever they want just because they're the minority of the issues, we can't just get discouraged and kind of let our guard down. Some may argue that corporations pushing an agenda that we as individuals need to be the solution for climate change is just a distraction and a way to cover up what they're doing. But I think if we were to play the blame game, which many people are doing, it's not very productive and we're not going to get anywhere. So going forward on this podcast, we're always going to take a look inward in what we can do to make the planet more carbon neutral. As always, thank you so much for listening. I hope that this episode was insightful for all of you. It was a fun topic, and I think with everything going on this week, there's still so much to be excited about and so much to look forward to. So for today's challenges, I have my three. First one, spend some time this week thinking about a topic that you'd like to learn more about, and then send me a recording. I'd love to hear from you guys. Secondly, use a carbon footprint calculator online and see what areas of your life contribute most to GHG. Third, find out more about your local government's policies on businesses and see how they're trying to fix this imbalance of GHG emissions. Feel free to try one or all of these challenges. I think that there's a chance moving forward that I may only have one action for certain episodes. We're going to see. I'd love to kind of hear your feedback on that. Just something that I'm kind of considering. Next week, I will talk to you all about carbon offsets. Till then, have a good week.